Enjoy all your favorite sports like never before at BetMGM. Sign up using code Buckeye and receive up to $1,500 back in bonus bets if you don't win your first bet. When you register with BetMGM, you'll get instant access to a variety of parlay selection features, live betting options, and the best daily promotions in the business. And with BetMGM at your fingertips, every play and every game matters more than ever. Place your money line, prop, or parlay bets with the king of sportsbooks today. Sign up using code Buckeye and receive up to $1,500 back in bonus bets if you don't win your first bet. BetMGM and GameSense remind you to play responsibly. 21 plus and present in Ohio, subject to eligibility requirements. Rewards are non-withdrawable bonus bets that expire in 7 days. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER in partnership with MGM Northfield Park.
Yo, what's up, everybody? Since you guys all know it is tax season, I want you guys to know that today's sponsor is brought to you by Magnolia Tax Services. If you're a business owner or a high-earning individual, take control of your finances with the tailored tax planning services of Magnolia Tax Services. Their team of certified public accountants and enrolled agents specializes in maximizing savings for individuals and businesses by utilizing the latest tax laws and strategies. From complex business structures to high net worth individuals, they'll develop a customized plan to minimize your tax liability and increase your bottom line. Don't leave money on the table. Contact our partners at Magnolia Tax Services today for a consultation and get $100 credit towards your service by clicking the link in the show notes. That's right, guys. Like I said in the beginning, it is tax season, so you want to make sure you tap in with my guys at Magnolia Tax Service today. And once again, that link is in the show notes, and now we'll get right into the show. Yo, 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 what's good, everybody? Welcome back to the greatest show on earth, the Millionaire Mindsets Podcast. I am your host, Xavier, and today I got another dope episode for y'all. But before we get started, I would like to advise all the watchers, all the listeners, to please subscribe. Leave that 5-star rating and review. We're trying to run those numbers up so you guys could do that. If you guys find this content and this channel valuable, give me that like, give me that subscribe button, share, do all those things. And like I said, I would greatly appreciate that. And get right to the show. So today I got another very special guest. I got a young man he just got here out of Nashville, Tennessee. His name is Paul Stone. What's good, bro? Welcome to the show.
Appreciate that, man. Appreciate you for having me here, especially last minute.
Yeah.
I'm honored to be in Dallas. Honored to be here.
Yeah, appreciate that, man. And just getting right to it, so for the people who this may be their first time seeing you or hearing you, give some brief background on yourself.
Yeah, so I'm 22. I live in Nashville, Tennessee, and I mainly build, flip, and develop real estate. Started wholesaling when I was in college, freshman year, wholesaling a couple months. I did my first flip while I was still in school. And then once COVID hit, I dropped out and went full on into new construction. So before I dropped out of school, I was wholesaling, I was flipping while I was still managing, having the school going on and trying to run a wholesale and a development business at the same time. And also scaling that business from doing one or two deals to trying to do a lot more than that. So once COVID hit, dropped out. Completed my first new construction house probably 2 months before COVID hit, and then seeing the process of that first house being built, or those first three houses being built, showed me what I needed to know about new construction. So I took that and ran with it. So once COVID hit, dropped out, kept on buying a bunch of lots, got my general contracting license in April, May of last year. And now I'm building most of my own houses now. So it's been a really fun ride, scaled really quickly. I don't really wholesale as much anymore unless it's something I just can't take on myself. But for the most part, that's what I do, new construction.
That's so interesting, man, because I know for the people that's going to see this, you look so young, man. You got the baby face. So to do all the things you're doing, it's extremely dope.
I appreciate that.
Yeah.
Appreciate that.
So talk about, because you say you dropped out in during the pandemic, right?
Correct.
Was people trying to discourage you from doing that? Because that's such a sensitive thing with a lot of people dropping out of school.
Yeah, 100%. And I think humans, we're naturally just like being comfortable. So
right.
The decision was made for me to drop out, honestly, subconsciously, because I had a couple of really big deals close. I think that was my first six-figure month. And after that happened, like, I really didn't have the motivation for school anymore. I had to keep a 3.5 GPA, which I did have. I had a 4.0 actually when I dropped out. But having to juggle school, driving from Nashville to Alabama and back, because while I was still in school, I was driving back on the weekends to go look at the properties I had, go look at potential properties I'm trying to wholesale and buy, and also learn the renovation process. So I made sure I didn't have classes on Fridays so I could account for that. So I'd leave Friday morning, drive back to Nashville, and then the whole weekend I'll just work. And then come back Saturday night and I'd have school. So having to juggle all that, it just got to the point where it's either I go all in on this opportunity that I have that I've been given, because I can always come back to school later. Always go to school. Exactly. So
yeah, that's a big it's a big lesson in that, because I try to tell people all the time that once you're doing something, especially you're trying to do something at grayscale, you can't be like 1 foot in and 1 foot out.
Yeah.
100%. You have to really be 100% all in, because you're not, especially if you want those results that you really striving and looking for, you can't be like, and that's like, as you learn with, even with school, you like, I can't be have 1 foot in school and 1 foot all in this, because my business gonna lack or my school gonna lack. So I gotta go all in on one, which probably you got family. You said, what country you say you came from?
I'm from Kenya.
In Kenya. And I know how. Is your parents as real, like, education-oriented?
Yeah, so my family was always education-oriented. My mom always said that she's not going to pay for college. Like, it's either full ride or you're going to deal with it. So,
you got a full ride?
I did.
Okay.
So, I got three older sisters. They all had full rides for undergrad as well. So, the expectation was already set.
Damn.
For me to carry that on. So, I did have a full ride for school, which is one
academic?
Of the reasons. Academic.
Okay.
Yep. Which is one of the reasons why it was easy for me to drop out, because if I was paying for my school, if I had loans, I probably would have stuck it out, because it's like, you know, I'm paying for it, but if I'm paying for it and I drop out, then, you know, that would probably not really sit well with my mom or with me, really. So not having to pay for it, it's no strings attached.
Man, that's what's even more interesting about that, knowing you had a full academic scholarship, is you dropped that. I feel like even a lot of parents would be like, nah, you got this full ride. You can't let this opportunity go. You got to make this work. And so if you decide to go back, would you still have the opportunity to have a scholarship or no?
Probably not. But honestly, I could pay for it.
He's not pay for that.
probably not though. And my mom, she understood once she saw the results of what I was doing.
She did, huh?
Yeah. She understood. I mean, like, she was like, "Are you sure?" But I was like, "Yeah, I just had my first six-figure month. I know what I'm doing, you know. I'm a real head first guy, you know. I'm gonna jump in and figure it out." So that's what happened. Luckily, the real estate market we've been in the past couple of years has been on the upswing. So I was able to get extremely lucky, work hard, and get to where I'm at now.
So how did you get in real estate?
So I started, I knew I wanted to be in real estate in high school, actually. So my major was mechanical engineering. Then I realized I didn't want to do mechanical engineering. So I was reading on BiggerPockets and some of these other real estate investment groups, not really knowing what I'm reading about, but just knew that sort of spoke to me. So all the people that I grew up with, in middle school, high school, who had very wealthy family, they all owned or had something to do with real estate. So I knew I wanted to be in real estate. And when I got to college, I went to a couple of meetups in Atlanta that were like young millennial, like entrepreneurial meetups. And there are people out there that are talking about they're doing this wholesaling thing. And they're 20 to 25 years old talking about they're making 5-6 figures a month, you know. And that's the sort of thing, like, you got to see it and know it's tangible to be able to do it yourself. Like, I don't think if I didn't see these other people making, like I said, 5-6 figures a month just from wholesaling, then if I didn't see that, I don't think I'd be where I'm at today. Because you got to see the vision first. So that's really what jump started it for me. I got in a couple of those dudes' offices in Atlanta. Soon after those meetings, they taught me about KPIs, systems, VAs, how to scale a wholesale business, how to run comps, how to do all that. And I took that and I did my first deal actually virtually off the MLS.
Okay.
Didn't know anything. My end buyer actually had to send me an assignment contract because I didn't really know how to type that up or anything. So he took care of me, made $8,000 on the first deal, and that showed me, you know, showed me
you
the
said
ropes.
8 or 80?
8,000.
Oh, okay. 8,000. Okay. Yep. You said that showed you what?
That showed me the ropes of like how to do a wholesale deal.
Okay.
You know, it might have been a little janky, but it worked. It closed. I was so happy. Like that was the most money I made on really doing anything, because I was like flipping cars and doing little stuff like that while I was in school, or while I was in college, or while I was in high school. So doing 8,000 on one deal, I mean, that it just felt good. So
especially being that young at that time, that's a switch go off right there. Like hold it on, is. Now I could do this now.
Exactly.
Yeah. So after that, because I know now that's when you was wholesaling at the time.
Correct.
And I know now you more transitioning to
new construction. Correct.
And why did you do that?
So I just knew that the people I was slinging these lots to were making a lot more money than I was. So I can make 5 or 10K on the wholesale, but you know, I watch them make 100, 150 on whatever I sell them. I know which side of the table I want to be on. So the first new construction deal I did, I partnered with the builder. I had the land. He went and got the construction loan. I put down the down payment on the loan, and I told him, like, hey, show me the ropes. Like, show me when you're talking to your lender. Show me how you do your pre-construction. What do you do for pre-construction? Show me how you talk to your subcontractors. Show me what to look for. Like, I want to know, like, how you're really building this house. So he really showed me the play on those first three houses. We split our profit on it, and we made each like $170,000.
Damn.
So being able to do that, and that was right before COVID hit. I mean, that was enough right there. Like, that showed me, hey, this is what I need to do. And during that process of us building those houses, all the lots that I was getting under contract that was going to wholesale, I started taking them down myself, because I was like, okay, after I do this first play, I should know enough to be able to build houses on my own. And I don't mean that in the sense of being the general contractor, being the sense of being able to get the financing and be able to hire somebody else to build.
To build it.
So that's what I was doing after I did those first three houses, is that I was hiring other people to build for me. And I still have other people that build some of my houses, but it's something that I've been wanting to take in-house. So last year I made that step to get my general contracting license and just start doing it, doing it on my own.
Mm. So what the process of you getting your general contractor license, what's that process like, and why was that important for you to do that?
It was really important to me because I learned that no one really cares more about your projects than yourself. So whether that's quality faltering, whether it's not hitting the timelines that you want, and most importantly, keeping it in budget, no one's going to do it better than you. And I learned that when you're only paying somebody a fee to build your house cost plus, they don't really care what the cost is at the end of the day, because it's your money. All they're getting paid is at $20,000, $25,000, $30,000 to build that house. But if you're the one that's signing the note for that construction loan, you're gonna want to make sure that it's done as fast as possible, as efficient as possible, and most importantly, staying within budget. So that's one thing that I was having trouble with, is some of the builders I was using blowing budgets.
Mm.
And as I'm learning more about the construction industry and how to build a house, I realized there are certain line items that I could really dial down and get it to where it's just not as expensive. Because a dollar saved is a dollar earned. And I learned that, like I said, when you're having someone else do it for you, it's never going to be as efficient as doing it yourself.
Are there any challenges being, like I said, you're only 22 years old.
And 100%.
And you look very young. So
100%.
Do you feel like people try to take advantage of you?
100%. So starting out, I mean, it's... there's always a barrier with your age, with wholesaling, going on appointments with sellers, and they don't think you can actually close.
We'll your mic down a little bit. You good. There you go.
Yeah, so, like, I mean, with wholesaling, the barriers was always going on appointments with sellers and saying, hey, I've got this much money to close this property. And in Nashville, a lot of the areas are higher end. So, like, you're not wholesaling 100, 200 grand houses. Sometimes you're wholesaling things that are $600,000, $700,000, $800,000. So, me being me, no, I don't have the $700,000 in my account, but you got to act like it, talk like it, you know, and really convince these sellers that you're capable of doing what you're capable of doing. So that definitely is there was a barrier for that, but once you're established and you have a name going on in the neighborhood, or you're doing stuff in the area and people see your signs or people have heard about you, it makes it a lot easier.
I can only imagine. So at this point, is you had your license, you said, for a year now. You've been in how many new constructions have you done now?
So I've got under my license, I've got five
okay
that are about to be done, And I've got 9 more I'm slated to start or under construction this year.
Really?
And with that, like I said, I still have other people building my houses. So I've got a good 15 to 16 houses that other people are still building for me.
Mm. What's that process like when you're building a house? Take us through that process from like the ground level, from like starting from zero.
Oh, man. So like I always tell people, I like to steal the dirt. So it always starts with getting the land at a really good price. I mean, I always tell people, if you're bringing something to me, I'm not your first buyer. I'm the person you call when you got to close it or you need to renegotiate it. So I always like to start with getting the land at a really good price. After that, it's pre-construction. So I don't like to buy lots that have any challenges or any issues with them. So pre-construction for me is usually making sure that the lot checks out, getting a survey. And if I can reuse plans that I've used before, I will, because that helps speed up my timeline.
Right.
But if not, then I'm going to engage with my architect, usually before I even close on something, and say, hey, these are my dimensions, these are my setbacks. Make me a plan that works for this within this square foot range. And they'll get something back to me within a couple of weeks. After that, it's usually financing. So with me, sometimes I take the land down by itself. Sometimes I take the land down with a construction loan. I like to wrap it all in one because then I get 100% financing on the land and the construction. So once I've got my financing in line, I have my pre-construction done, I'm waiting on my survey, I'll go ahead and usually try to pull permits before I close on something. Mm. Sometimes I do that because I feel like I might get pushed back for something with the permitting process. I want to make sure before I buy this, I want to pull permits on it. So if I can't do it, it's got to be something that's 100% a home run, worst case scenario. And then after that, I mean, it's like Legos. Call my foundation guy. We dig and pour the footers, then the block. Then you call the framers, then the siding, then the windows, rough in. And then honestly, once you're past the drywall stage, it's a walk in the park from there. Mm. But really the biggest thing during the whole process is keeping everybody accountable. So keeping the subcontractors accountable, keeping the people that work for you accountable, keeping the supply houses accountable, and honestly just being really good with on-site management. Like I said, that's one of the things that other builders faltered with a little bit, so that's why I had to take it in-house.
Okay, makes sense. And what's been your biggest deal to date?
Oh, man. So I've got 2 deals that I would consider probably my biggest deals. I had a 2-build lot, so it was a lot that had 1 house on it that I tore down and built 2. So I paid $450 for the lot, and I built 2 houses that I ended up selling for $1.7 million and $1.5 million. I was
each.
Each.
Okay.
Correct. So it was one buyer actually from here, from Texas, cash buyer. Never saw the houses, and it sold during the drywall phase, pre-sold during the drywall phase, and it was a 1031. So I mean, as soon as the houses were done, it closed out. So I ended up being in that project for $2 million and it sold for $3.2 million. So after realtor expenses and everything, ended up netting $1.1 million.
Really?
On a single project.
That's and when did you do that one?
That was last year.
So you were you even 22 at the time?
I was 22 by the time it closed, but I was 20 when I took down the land. I took down the land February of 21.
Mm.
And it ended up closing out June of 22.
What does that feel like to accomplish something like that at 21, 22 years old?
It felt good because I was actually gonna wholesale that same piece of land for $200K. So I had it for $450 and I had somebody willing to give me $650 for it. So I could have took the $200 and ran, but I knew that if I watched the play through, then there was a lot bigger upside. Also, the market definitely shifted during that time. I was expecting to sell between 1.2 to 1.4 and then ended up getting $200,000 to $300,000 more than that per house. So that was definitely a big part of that. But honestly, when I had taken down the land, I'd already completed new construction. And luxury is no different than building smart houses. It's just more. It's
really
bigger. And I wasn't the builder. So the builder that built those houses was experienced with doing these luxury high-end deals. So I felt comfortable at the time.
See, this the same. It probably the same time it took you to do all the things you were doing to close that deal, it's probably the same amount of time you put into smaller deals.
Exactly.
So it makes sense. The point I'm getting at is, for the people that's listening and watching, if you want to go into business, it makes sense to go after bigger deals.
It does. So that's one thing that I do with my business now, is I like to chase whales. So there's nothing wrong with making 10, 20, 30 right. on a deal, but if I could spend a little bit more time to chase a whale, that's what I'm going to do. So, like I mentioned, I had another deal that was also pretty good during that same time frame. It closed a week after I closed that one for $1.1 million. I had a wholesale deal that I put under contract April of 2021. $50,000 non-refundable earnest money down, and I couldn't close it till June of 2022. Market went crazy at that time, but I knew the price that I had it at was really good, so I was comfortable having my $50,000 non-refundable sitting for a year and a half until I could close on it. I ended up, my intention was to close on it and build it, but I ended up just wholesaling to somebody else, so I picked it up for $850, and I sold it for $1.25, and it closed within 30 days. So I double closed on it, made $400,000. A week after I closed those other two houses.
Oh, so you got one. Damn. So that's one. So that's 1.5 in what?
Like 3 weeks. Yeah, definitely very humbling.
Man, you make 1.5 and within a month at age 22. I'm gonna tell you what I would have did at 22.
I know what I did. It's sitting in my driveway.
So what you do with it?
So what did I do? So I spent $500,000 of it investing in two other people's syndication deals for the tax benefits. So
that's smart.
Yeah, that's the first thing I did.
That's smart, bro.
First thing I did. Second thing I did, I bought a McLaren. I had to, man. It was just, you know, it's something you always want to do is buy your first supercar, right? And, like, I didn't think it would come so soon for me. And, like, I kept talking with my boys. They were like, are you going to pull the trigger? Are you going to pull the trigger? Some of them, like, you know, you need to do it. So I saw a McLaren that I actually tried to buy previously. They ended up going back to the dealer that I know, and I told him, when you get that car back, I want it. I bought it out of Houston, Texas. Okay. Sight unseen, showed up at my door like 4 days later. We stayed up till like 2 or 3 in the morning, waiting on the transporter to bring my car, and it was just a crazy experience. Crazy.
So that was probably like was that the only major purchase you bought? You got?
I put a deposit on a Urus as well. Still haven't gotten it, but man, yeah.
So all right, so the Lamb and the McLaren.
Yeah.
Okay. Then yep. Them some big purchases right there. You deserve it though. After doing, like I said, 1.5 in just a month, I would have wild the fuck out.
Yeah. It's hard not to, but like with development, I mean, yes, you can make a lot of money, but you're spending a lot of
money. Spending a lot.
So the down payments, the interest payments, like that one project that, like I said, made $1 million on, the interest note on that was $18,000 a month by the time it closed. So you do that.
$18,000 a month?
$18,000 a month for the interest on that construction loan. So you got to be able to watch your cash flow and be able to manage your cash flow when you're developing these bigger deals. So like $1 million can go away just
quick.
Like that. I've seen it.
Yeah, No. You definitely right, bro. So you definitely right. Who taught you or how did you learn how to manage your money?
By not being good at managing it. So I've already been in the hole. I've already over leveraged myself. And once I saw really? What I did that put myself in that position, I was okay. But there's a certain spot that I don't want to be at again. And also just talking to other people in the business, like, hey, like, how do you manage 10 to 15 construction projects at a time? Are you building your interest into your loans? Like, how are you managing to do it? So being able to do that, pad my budgets a little bit to help take care of the interest has definitely helped me streamline and get my cash flow the way it should be every single month.
Mm. So let me ask you this, speaking of the money part, you know, this is Millionaire Mindset. People, they always want to know about the big deals, the big months. So what was your biggest year?
Last year, because I'm in that growth trajectory phase. So last year was definitely my biggest year for sure.
How much did you do, if you don't mind sharing?
Oh, man. I did just under 2.6.
Okay.
Yeah.
That's good, bro. That's good. Yeah, that's and that you're on a trajectory to, by the time you hit 30, you'll be doing.
I don't know. We'll see.
Yeah, right. We'll right. See, I don't want to put too much pressure on you.
But I do think, 2022, like I always tell people, or people know, it was an anomaly. A lot of people are making money in real estate. So I'm excited to see what happens this year. But I do have some plays that I set up last year that should set me up well for this year.
Okay.
But like nothing is given. I mean, you got to put in the work to be able to make seven figures. And even when you make seven figures, to consistently repeat and keep on making seven figures, it might take something different from what you're doing last year.
That's true. Things change. Industry changes.
Things do change. The economy changes. Market conditions change. And you have to be able to adapt with it.
Was there any, after hitting seven figures, was there any eye-opening experiences or things that you believed that you thought that a conception you had that you could have been wrong about or right about based on money? And then after you get it, you're like, whoa, yeah. I was off about that one.
100%. I will say that you have the same problems even if you're making a lot of money and not making a lot of money.
That's true.
It's just the problems that money can fix. Are fixed, but you know, you still go through your own personal battles. You still deal with the ups and downs. You know, like it's great to have it, but it's also good to be recognizing of where you came from before and know that it can be taken away from you.
Absolutely,
just like that. So, I mean, it is good to not have to worry about a roof over your head and not have to worry about bills being paid and stuff like that. But I also know that with how aggressively I scaled my business, it is possible to over-leverage and overextend yourself. So that's one thing that doesn't change, and that's one thing I'm trying to be very recognizant of, is not going way overboard. Because I could be where I'm at now, and then I could fall back 6 months from now, you know?
Yeah, but even if that was to happen, God forbid, but even if it was to happen, you know, the most valuable thing you got is time on your side.
100%. So being able to make a lot of active income is great, but I am working on building my rental portfolio. So worst case scenario, if none of my houses sell, I still have consistent money coming in every single month. So that's one thing I'm definitely big on for this year, is expanding and scaling my rental portfolio.
Yeah, because that's what they call wealth, the true wealth.
Yep.
I heard somebody say, they said rich is money and wealth is time, 100%. Meaning that you don't have to do anything no more, and you got abundance. Let's say I got enough money I could pay my bills for the next 100 years. Riches, I could have a bunch of money, but if my expenses is really high and only gonna last for 2 years if I don't work, it's like you got bread, but you ain't, that's not considered wealthy for
100%.
Real.
100%. And I do feel somewhat like I'm trading my time for money right now, but that's okay.
But that's okay though.
I'm young, I've got the ability to go after it. But this isn't something that I want to do long term. I could get bored with it in 10 years, you know? And I want to make sure that I'm set up the way I want to be set up, so I don't have to do anything 10 years from now if I don't want to.
You said you don't want to do this long term?
I don't.
Really?
I do have some mentors that told me, like, hey, once you're in the business 10, 15 years, you either want to be up enough that you don't have to do this anymore, or you're going to be so tired of it that you're not going to want to do it anymore. I love what I do right now. I think I'm going to continue loving to do what I'm doing, but I love traveling. I like hanging out with my friends. I like my family. I want to be able to have time for experiences. And have time for those experiences, I have to be not working as much as I'm working now. So while I am working, I got to work as hard as I can so I can eventually call it quits at some point.
I like the mentality, man. I think I try to get people in their 20s to understand, like, man, when you're in your 20s, in my opinion, my belief is you should go as hard as possible. Keep your foot on the gas your entire 20s instead of what a lot of people do is, you know, sit on their ass, party, bullshit, and then try to get it right later. I think you should try to get it right as early as possible. So then later, if you got a kid, if you start having kids, a family, you can start kind of kicking your feet back a little bit. You know what I'm saying? Not completely relaxing, but just if you want to say, hey, man, I'm going to take a year off because my 20s, that whole decade I worked every day. If you want to take a year off, you can do that, and you can afford to do it comfortably. But if you bullshitting, you will never really be able to afford that opportunity. So I salute people like you that's, you 22, you've been mashing for a minute. So by the time you 30, if you want to scale back a little bit, more than likely with the trajectory you're going, you will be able to comfortably do that. Because nobody want to be fucking working 12, 16 hours forever. Let's keep it real. You know what I'm saying? We all want to get to a point where we can start, you know, chilling a little bit. But you can't do that, once again, if you're not handling your business.
100%.
So salute to you for being so young and on your shit, as they say.
I'm trying, man. Like people say, it always starts with a strong foundation. I think
it does.
My mom definitely instilled that work ethic in me. My first job was a grocery store. I was 14 turning 15. I was pushing carts, you know, for minimum wage, $7.25 an hour. I was working 30 hours a week. So I'd get dropped off after school, go work, come back, work on the weekends. And what my mom did was that 90% of my paycheck, which was like maybe 200 bucks a week or something like that, 90% of that she would put in my bank account where I couldn't touch it. The other 10% was money that I could use to do whatever. I like seeing my money grow in my bank account, so I eventually just stopped spending like any of it. And then my second job, I worked at Chick-fil-A. That was cool. It taught me how to work with other people well.
Yep.
I will say that that was probably the most fun job I could have had at the time because I was working with my friends. But after doing that for probably 9 months or so, I knew I wanted to start making more money. So I started doing valet at 16, which is probably not smart on the valet, on the company side.
On the
company side. But yeah, I was a valet at 16, but that that experience there, like being around people who are wealthy, watching how they move, the cars they're driving, and really how normal they seemed, you know, like you wouldn't be able to tell like, hey, this dude's worth 50 million.
Mm-hmm.
That showed me that, you know, there is a way to start making more money the right way. And like I said, it set a foundation for me.
That's heavy. Man, those, you know, we got in society, a lot of times we kind of shit on those minuscule jobs, but those jobs teach you a lot. Especially for our people, the people that's in the field that we in regarding entrepreneurship, those jobs that we never really forget because we remember like, man, I remember being here at this. I know my first job, I worked at a daycare when I was 16. And I'll never forget putting all those hours in a week for that minuscule check. It keep me with a sense of appreciation for everything that 100%. I do. Because I remember like where I came from, what I started with, how much money. I think my first job, my stuff was like $7 an hour too, maybe six. It was no money for real. But to see where I came, where it led me to is everything, man. But I want to talk about real estate again for a second, just to give my listeners a game. So if the people that's watching, listening to this, if they wanted to become, then do what you do when it comes to new builds and stuff like that. Get them some game on how they can do that from a ground level if they ain't done nothing in real estate yet.
Honestly,
To watch too, man.
Appreciate that. Yeah, appreciate that.
I like the way.
My baby.
Yeah, hey. He talked about them. I ain't trying to get you sidetracked, but he talked about the McLaren and the Lamb. He didn't even talk about the AP, man.
Yeah, man. it was actually around that same time frame as well. Bought the car, seen a watch I really liked, have been wanting, rose gold AP. Had to do it.
That thing beautiful, bro. That's beautiful, man.
Thank you.
For somebody that's listening and they want to get into construction, a new build, get them some game on how they can do that. Because I know a lot of people, they're going to hear this and they're going to be like, man, that's something I want to do. How can I do that?
Honestly, I would say if you don't have a stable W-2 income, I start with wholesaling. Wholesaling is like the start of really everything. You got to get the land at a good price. So whether that's you're working with wholesalers off market or whether you're working with an agent, you want to make sure you get the land at a good price and have someone who's able to help you, such as a seasoned real estate agent that also invests themselves, help you find good deals. After that, I would network with the local real estate investor associations, if you have any. That was definitely one of the things that helped me out early on, is that there was a real estate investors networking group on Facebook in Nashville. And any questions I had, there was always people willing to answer. I'd be on there asking questions like 4 or 5 times a day. Like I'm pretty sure they got tired of my posts. But there's always people that are willing to help. So you can find the local Facebook groups, the local networking groups of other investors. They'll help you. They'll help you find a good general contractor or builder. They'll help you make the lending relationships because you need money. You need a construction loan to build something. And they'll help you evaluate and pick out the areas that you want to be in. So if you don't know anything at all, I would start networking with local investors, whether that's on or off the internet in your area. And I've noticed more often than not, people are willing to share that information. There's more than enough out here for everybody. No one ever told me, hey, you got to pay me to tell you the answer to this. You know, everyone in Nashville so far for me has been super helpful.
Really?
Super helpful.
That's big, bro. What's your biggest regret since you've been in business?
Biggest regret? Honestly, not being born 10 years sooner. Man. Yeah. No, but besides that, honestly, the biggest regret for me is probably not getting into new construction sooner, to be honest. Although I don't think that would be possible, but if I jumped in new construction right off the bat, like even a year and a half, 2 years sooner, I feel like I could be a lot further along. But I feel like that's something everybody feels like, you know.
Mm.
But I think there's not really anything major that I regret. I mean, everything's happened for a reason. I'm put in this position for a reason. So I think everything's playing out the way it should.
Mm. So from this conversation, I'm getting that you have a clearly like a ballsy, like an audacious mentality. And I want to ask, like, where do you get that from? Because, you know, to get into new builds and new construction, that is an intimidating field for many people that's even in real estate. It's like, I could get real estate on the realtor side, wholesale side, even buying and flipping. But building, doing new builds can be very intimidating to a lot of people and controlling the whole project.
It can be.
So where do you get that like, audacious?
I would say some of the people that were doing new construction that I networked with early on, they were telling me right off the bat, start scaling into new construction.
Really?
Don't worry about it. The money will be there. So these are people who they have 10, 20, 30 million in loans, and they're like, after the first million, it don't even matter. Like, if everything went bad, you're sunk anyways. So why not go balls to the wall and try to scale as fast as you can? For me, I'm really big on personal development and self-education. So I feel like if I get knocked down, I'm young. I don't have any kids. I'm not really taking anything. I don't really have anything that's that risky, I feel. I'm in most of my deals pretty low, which is what, you know, you want to do.
What you want to be.
Honestly, I mean, risk is something that you have to do. If you want to live the lifestyle that you want to live, you want to drive around the cars you want to live, if you want to get the next level, you have to take a lot of risk.
Yeah, absolutely.
Humans like being comfortable. I didn't grow up with a silver spoon in my mouth. So, you know, not knowing that worst case scenario, I have the knowledge to make it back. That's what keeps me comfortable, because I do think about it sometimes, like, hey, like, how much did I pay in interest last month? 40, 50, 60,000. And that's, you know, you can go months on end without having a closing. Sometimes that gets to you, but you can't get to the next level without taking any risk. If you're not willing to leave your job, if you want to be an entrepreneur, if you're not willing to sign on that loan, you know, then it's not for you.
No, I agree.
It ain't for you. You know, like, you got to be okay with knowing that you're signing for millions of dollars worth of debt. Not saying to do that right off the bat. That's just what I did. But it's a lot of risk.
Mm.
It's a lot of risk.
Mm. That's game, bro. Speaking of debt, is in real estate, obviously, so debt is something that you're fond of. You know, a lot of people try to run away from it.
You got to use debt is a tool. If you can borrow money at 7% and then get a 50% return, keep the spread in the middle, you might as well, right?
Right.
So with real estate, if the bank didn't want to give me 100% on a construction loan, I would do a second, I would get second position funding. So the bank, for example, if it's $1 million loan, the bank gives me $800,000, but tells me to come up with the other $200,000 for the down payment. I'm gonna go find someone else and borrow that $200,000 from. So being able to do that is how you scale without using your own money and do more projects. So that's how I scale so aggressively, is if the bank didn't want to give me 100% on the first position, I would borrow on the second position, pay them 10 to 15% fixed on their money when the project sells. And that lets me use my own cash, free up my own cash to float construction costs and go do more projects. So debt is something that you got to be comfortable with.
Yeah, I agree. You spoke on mentors a few times. I want to ask you this. So how does someone, because this is a common question that people ask, when they are at a level where they're not experiencing a lot of success yet, how do they get around these people that have experienced it so they could actually be able to get mentor or get knowledge from these people?
You got to reach out. I mean, like, there's people who come up to me in person and be like, hey, I didn't want to hit you on Instagram in the DMs because I didn't feel like you're going to respond.
Right.
And I'm real big on responding to everybody. That's what people did to me. So that's how I'm going to pay it
forward. Pay it back.
So you got to reach out. You got to reach out. Find the people that are doing business, like actually doing business, provable, verifiable business in your area. And, you know, if you can't offer them anything, just say, hey, like, could I get 10 to 15 minutes of your time, even if it's a phone call? And you got to be persistent. Don't annoy them, but, you know, be persistent. One of my best friends now, his name is John Swift. He's a builder in Nashville. I think I messaged him like 4 or 5 times before he responded to me.
You did?
Yeah. Like he gave me his phone number the first time. I texted him a couple of times. He didn't respond. Text him again. He didn't respond. And then like the fourth time I hit him, he was like, hey man, let's meet up. Like let's chop it up. And then we've been rocking since. So
that's what's up.
Got to reach out.
The second thing, the follow-up.
Follow-up is key. I mean, with people, with wholesaling, if you want to get a deal, you got to follow up. You want to get in front of somebody, you got to follow up.
Bro, you giving a lot of value. And let me ask you this as well. So, like I asked you, your biggest regret. What is your biggest let me see how I could put this. Your biggest L that you took in business.
Oh man. Biggest L in business. I'd say there's two houses that I was having built for me. I haven't really spoken too much on it. They're both pre-sold. I was going to make like $800,000 on them. And we had some really bad storms, like tornado level wind, that basically made these houses a loss. Like I got to tear them down and rebuild. So I was actually on vacation when I got that call, and I'm like, man, like, I was kind of looking forward to that payday, you know, kind of, you know, I mean, it's something. So that was, I'd probably say that. So now I'm dealing with builder's risk insurance. They're saying there's structural engineers out, da da da. But I mean, like I said, that was a pretty big payday. I was supposed to have in the next couple of months. So I got to plan accordingly.
How do you deal with that when you have L's like that?
Honestly, there really wasn't anything I could do. I just got to, now I know.
Talk it up.
Yeah, now I'm going through the process of what it's like dealing with insurance. So if it happens next time, now I know. Everything's a learning experience. I will say I'm thankful that I have multiple houses going on at a time, because what if that was my only project I had going on this year? Then, you know, that's my only payday gone.
Yep.
So that's one of the reasons why I had to scale so aggressively. So worst case scenario, if you're throwing 100 darts, and one of them don't miss, that's okay. You got 99 more of them.
Yep.
But if you got one dart that you really, really, really needed to hit and it don't hit, what are you going to do?
Back to the whiteboard, huh?
Back to the whiteboard. Mm-hmm. So.
That's big. What's your biggest, the best piece of advice somebody's ever given you?
Best piece of advice someone's given me? Honestly, the best piece of advice I've been given is what I was speaking on before. Take all the risks you can while you're young. Really. I mean, like, you're in good health. You have time. You don't have kids. Don't have dependents. You got to take risk.
You do.
I'd say, and that's something that stuck with me. That stuck with me when I was signing on a $2 million loan on those two houses that I made $1 million on at the end. I was nervous as hell. Like the day before the closing, like I was thinking, like, man, like, I don't know if I want to do it. I was actually about to hit the person up that I was going to wholesale to, like, hey, like, you still want to buy it? Like, I'll just close on it and then resell it to you. Yeah, I'm serious, because when I closed on that construction loan, I already had closed on the land. So I closed the land, the hard money, and then refinanced into construction loan. So during that time period, I was like having second thoughts. Like,
really?
This is $2 million. Like, I ain't even seen $2 million. I don't even know if I'd seen $500,000 at that time, you know? That's a lot of money to be signing on the dotted line for, personally guaranteeing it. You know, if I don't pay it back, they're coming after me. So I'd say got to be comfortable with risk.
You got to be comfortable. And something I want to double down on something you said. And that's because I want people to understand, once you're young and you're not being risky, you missing out on a huge opportunity to play a bid, because as you get older, your risk tolerance naturally goes down. Because even me, I'll speak from personal experiences. I'm 29 now. I'm not nearly as risky as I was at 24. At 24, Shit, I would have fucking put my whole bank account on an investment with no second thoughts about it. And I'm still very risky now, but it's completely different because now I got a family. I have a kid. I can't have that. I got to move. I can't have that. I can't put all my eggs into one basket because it go wrong. It don't just affect me anymore. You know what I'm saying? Now it affects my whole family, my daughter's well-being and all those things. So, but being risky early on is what propelled me to be in these positions. So what I'm saying for the people that's listening is if you're young, you're under 25, you're under 28, be very, 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 especially if you don't have a family, be very, very risky because even if you take L's, those L's are going to be lessons for you. It's going to be big lessons. You know what I'm saying? That you might have to learn anyway as time goes on. So it's important to do those things while you're young, in my opinion. Just take advantage of that opportunity you have, and that's time. Like that's like you said, that's the best piece of advice somebody gave you. That's really the best piece of advice you could really give anybody that's young. Like just go fucking hard, take a lot of risks. Because worst case scenario, if you fail a lot, you still only 25. You got your whole life to get it right. And this is my final question I got for you. People, when they hear people like you talk and they hear your story, they to learn more about you and learn things you learn. They want to know what the hell is he reading? What education he's getting for him to think like this? So my question is, name your top three books.
Man, Grant Cardone has one. I think it's like The Power of the 10X.
10X Rule?
Yeah, the 10X Rule. That's a good one. Rich Dad, Poor Dad, that's a staple. Yep. I mean, like, I feel like if that book by itself should open up the door so you can start reading other stuff.
I agree.
And another one, I can't remember. I can't remember. there's a whole lot of them I've read, but there's a third one that stuck out to me that I can't recall. But yeah, Rich Dad Poor Dad and the 10X book by Grant Cardone for sure.
Are you big into like self education?
I am. So I mean, I'm always wanting to know how to do something better. How to better myself, because I feel like, you know, if you're not the best version of yourself, if you're not putting out the best version of yourself, then you're doing yourself a disservice.
You are
doing yourself a disservice, 100%.
No, that's big, man. But before I let you go, man, I appreciate you taking the time to give my listeners the game, bring a lot of value, man. This is dope, man. I love to see all the things you're doing at such a young age, man. I'm looking forward to see what you're gonna do in the future, for real. But before I let you go, plug all your stuff where people can find you, follow you, like everything. If they want to they want to DM you, send you a question, all those things. Plug all your stuff.
Oh yeah, for sure. If y'all want to follow me on Instagram, that's what I'm on the most. Instagram. My handle is Paul Paul1, then X. Paul ST1X. I'm also on TikTok. It's Paul the Builder. I'll be posting more on there as well. Yeah, Paul the Builder.
That's catchy, man. Paul, I like you should stick with that one. You should make I like that one, man. But like I said again, man, I appreciate you taking the time to come on. Like, this was dope, man. Like I said, I'm really gonna be tapping in with you. Looking forward to see what you do in the future, man. I wish you nothing but the best moving forward, for real. And but you guys can follow me on all platforms. Of wrapping up at Xavier. I'm at the official Xavier Miller on Instagram. The Millionaire Mindset is everywhere on all platforms, TikTok, Twitter, YouTube, like I said, IG, all those things. You can tap in with us. And that's all I got for y'all in this episode of the Millionaire Mindset Podcast. See you guys next episode. Peace. Gotta get your brain right if you're trying to make $1 million. If you ain't gonna do it for yourself, then do it for your mama. Only stay surrounded by them people if you know they solid. Elevate your hustle up today to double up your profit. Trying to learn some game, Xavier gonna talk about it. No, Deanna, speak that shit that everybody vouching. Ain't no more excuses valid. Get up off the couch and get up in your bag. To your bank account, need an accountant.
Hey. Enjoy all your favorite sports like never before at BetMGM. Sign up using code Buckeye and receive up to $1,500 back in bonus bets if you don't win your first bet. When you register with BetMGM, you'll get instant access to a variety of parlay selection features, live betting options, and the best daily promotions in the business. And with BetMGM at your fingertips, every play and every game matters more than ever. Place your money line, prop, or parlay bets with the king of sportsbooks today. Sign up using code Buckeye and receive up to $1,500 back in bonus bets if you don't win your first bet. BetMGM and GameSense remind you to play responsibly. 21 plus and present in Ohio, subject to eligibility requirements. Rewards are non-withdrawable bonus bets that expire in 7 days. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER in partnership with MGM Northfield Park.
With Chime Secure Credit Card, you can start improving your credit scores with everyday purchases and regular on-time payments. Get started at Chime.com/build. The Chime Credit Builder Visa Credit Card is issued by Bancorp Bank N.A. or Stride Bank N.A. Members FDIC. Results may vary. See Chime.com for details. Terms and conditions apply. Go to Chime.com/disclosures for details.